speaking of entitlements, I want to talk about slavery.
Okay.
Because you'll say, oh, well, you know, come on, slavery. What do we have to learn about slavery? What is slavery going to teach me today? So it would surprise you to know a tremendous, tremendous amount. And I think the United States of America would be a much better place if it followed the Torah and Mishpatim and reenacted slavery. Oh, sounds pretty radical, right? Not as radical as you think. It's not racial slavery, but a different type of slavery, the slavery defined in the Torah. So you'll notice that the Torah says, we're on page 416, says the Torah. Ve'ela ha-mishpatim. These are the ordinances asher tasim lifneihem. What's unusual about this? Normally, what would God say if God wanted to teach us mitzvot? Ela mishpatim asher tetraveim, titein lahem, tagid lahem. What does it mean, tasim bifneihem? Tasim means to place before them. It's very weird. So I just want to share you with the first two Rashis, because they're very, very significant and worthwhile. They really are worthwhile to know. They're very famous Rashis. It says Rashi, ve'ela ha-mishpatim, ve'ela. Kol makom shene'amar ele, anywhere it says the word ele, pasal et harishonim. If I say ele ha-torot, that means these, but not what came before. Right? This is what I want you to know. When I say that, that means everything I told you before, not worth anything. But if it says ve'ela and this, mosif al harishonim.
Means everything added.
Everything added from before. Right, so now, so what's it adding? Ma harishonim mi-sinai. Just like the first commandment came from Har Sinai, af elu mi-sinai. These are also from Har Sinai. I think that it's a very important comment. You'll say, oh, of course these are from Har Sinai. It's in the Torah. You know, I could take this one of two ways. I'll take it the firm way. We in the firm community are very, very good at, you know, the what were the mitzvot that came before this? The mizbeach, the altar, and the sacrifices. We're really good at ritual. We're excellent at it. You know, about keeping kosher in the home and you know, well, rabbi, call me up. I made this mistake or I made that mistake and I need to know exactly how to do this or how to do that. Very meticulous about how exactly our lulav and esrog should look. You don't want to have a spot on the esrog.
Right.
But what about mishpatim? What is mishpatim about?
Judgments.
Mishpatim?
No.
What is a mishpat?
Judgment
means?
Relationships between human beings.
Man, fellow man. How do you treat your workers? How do you behave towards other people? Do you pay on time? Do you cheat? Do you steal? One sometimes gets a sense that, you know, that we're very good at the first part, but the second part, you know, come on, Rabbi, this is the real world we're living in, and, you know, you got to make a living in the real world.
But these are moral judgments.
Some people would say subjective moral judgments. Says the Torah, look at the words of Rashi, ve'ele ha-mishpatim, ma-rishonim mi-sinai, af-elu mi-sinai. Both of these types of commandments are given at Har Sinai. And just like you wouldn't think for a minute of buying a piece of bacon and frying it up with your eggs in the morning, you wouldn't think about that for a minute. Ha ha, for sure, I'm bacon in my house. Except, you know, when it comes to, you know, I've got an all-cash business, well, do you pay your taxes? Nobody pays their taxes here. Nobody knows anybody that has an all-cash business? What? The whole New York.
Yeah.
And when people think of New York, what do they think of?
Under the table.
From Jews, right?
Oh.
Yeah. So how could that be? Why is it? You know, we often, it's a mixture of taking the government. But we shouldn't laugh about it. You know, we shouldn't laugh about it. And we should speak up about it. We have to speak up about it. Because these are mitzvahs too. And, you know, we've got the pashas up the wazoo, chassidus shechita, you know, non-gebrach, blah, blah, blah. But what about how you're treating your fellow man? Oh, I got a great deal. You know, as somebody told me once, that there's this, like it's a stick in New York, not to pay your bills. Not because you can't, but I'll pay when I feel like it. That's usher. You're not allowed to do that. How do you treat the people you deal with? How do you treat your workers? How do you treat your co-workers? How do you treat your superiors? A lot of these things. How do you fight with people? Everybody fights. We all fight. How do you fight? Like there's a right way to fight, and there's a wrong way to fight. You know, when you sell, one of the big things is scales, right? How are the weights on your scales? Et cetera, et cetera. So, Ve'ela Mishpatim, and I think that this is something that we don't stick up for. Like you said, it's a kind of a joke in a way. You know, when you go to this, you know, when you go to this place, when I go to these places, usually you have an option. You pay cash or you want to pay with your credit card. So they'll tell you, well, if you pay with your credit card, then I have to charge you tax. What is it? You mean if I don't pay with my credit card, you don't have to charge me tax? No, you have to, you just don't. Pay with your credit card. She said, oh, that's not my problem. You're probably right. Meaning, according to the letter of the law, it's their legal obligation, not your legal obligation. But don't we have a legal obligation? Don't we have a moral obligation to say that's not right?
You don't have the right to enable that kind of
thing. Well, whether you have the right or not, I'm not sure.
Well, you shouldn't enable
we that. Shouldn't, we should not, we in the religious community should not encourage this kind of behavior. Because it's wrong and it's inappropriate. Okay.
So what would you do? You would go out of the store and look by?
I'd probably pay tax. Hmm. I mean, I have done that before. You know, it's hard. It's a big challenge. Money is, you know. Sometimes I guess it's. I think it's easier to do all the meticulous, the ritual things, so, and not when you're dealing with you know your monetary life. It's very hard. It's really a bigger challenge. I'm not sure what happened. Okay. Asher tashim b'fnehem. Next Rashi is about the fourth line. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu leMoshe. God said to Moshe, Lo ta'aleh al da'atcha lomar. Don't think you have to tell them two or three times. Until it's said in their mouths like a Mishnah. But I don't have to teach them the reason. They just have to know what it is. I don't have to teach them the reason and the understanding. That's what it says. Asher tashim lifnehem. Place it before them. Kushulchan ha'aruch u'muchan le'echol b'fnei ha'adam. You have a responsibility to teach it to them, and to explain it to them, and to set it down before them.
Like a set table.
The Shulchan, ever heard of the word, the book, the Shulchan Aruch?
Yes.
Yeah, that's it. This is where it's from. It has to be like a set table. That a person should be able to know what they're supposed to do and how they're supposed to do it. And that's a challenge. It's a big challenge as a rabbi trying to communicate the Torah in a way that's understandable to people. You know, sometimes what you don't realize is I'm speaking on this level because I have this experience, and somebody else who doesn't have the experience isn't communicating with me. Okay, well, that's another interesting rationale. Okay, next. I thought we were going to talk about avadim, about slaves. Ki shikne eved ivri. I'm going to read the whole section, and we're going to go through it in detail. Ki shikne eved ivri, sheish shanim ya'avod, uvashvi'itz yeisei lachafshi chinam. If you buy an eved ivri, see what he translates it as? Eved ivri. How would you translate those words literally?
Hebrew.
Ivri means a Hebrew slave.
Yeah.
It's unclear, at least in the Torah, what that means. If you look at the Ar Scroll, he translates it as a Jewish bondsman. What is a bondsman?
A slave.
What? What is a bondsman? What? Ah, very interesting. When does a bondsman, when does a person have to...
A bondsman.
Right, when a person is arrested, very good, Aviva, in today's day and age, when a person is arrested, you're arrested for a felony. You were embezzling money from the government, and they're going to throw you in jail. Okay, that happens a lot, too. So you're arrested, and then they say, okay, we're going to let you out on bond.
Yeah, on bond.
Which means you have to pay a certain amount of money
to go
free. And if you don't come back,
you
lose your money. And the way they work it is, they have what's called the bail bondsman, and that you buy a bond, basically. And if you don't pay the bond guy back, he's going to come after you. If he charges you interest, and he's going to come after you. Okay. But what's a bondsman? What's a Jewish bondsman? Why does our scope translate it as a Jewish bondsman? How would you translate it, Eved?
Slave.
All right.
It's redeemable.
Is it redeemable?
A bondsman
is redeemable, but right. This is not a redeemable. This is a slave.
Right, but so that's why I'm wondering why are they if you buy a Jewish bondsman, it has the implication that it's a possibility that it's a temporary situation that you are able to unenslave them, that you can free them, or that they're...
You can free your slave anytime you want.
Yeah, that's true.
Can he free himself?
Every certain amount of time.
If you have the availability of raising cash or money to buy himself back.
Could he?
Probably not.
I guess he could, if I bought a slave.
Right.
And I guess he could pay me off to free him if he wanted to.
Right. Where would he get the money?
That's the whole question. Right.
Here's the check. Where would he get the money?
Right. Yeah.
Good question.
He'd have to borrow it.
I don't know.
Borrow it from you.
How do you become a slave? How do you become a Jewish slave?
You become a slave?
Yeah.
You have money to pay... If you're in debt and you don't have money to pay for it, so I suppose he could hold on to you until you pay him.
Not legally. If I owed you money and I didn't have anything to pay you with, right? You couldn't force me to pay you. You'd have a debt against me, a lien against me until I could pay. You couldn't force me. You couldn't sell me. You couldn't buy me. I wouldn't owe you myself. Anybody, how did you become a Jewish slave?
The person has too many children to make
a bought from someone.
What's that? I'm sorry, Mr. Search. Good. Right. There are two options. There's two ways for us to become a slave. One is like Mrs. Hirsch said. The first is if a person owes a lot of money and he's in debt and he can't get out of debt, he has the right to sell himself into slavery. Okay? What's the other one?
Well, I was thinking in terms of a different thing entirely. Instead of selling himself, he's selling his work.
That's not a slave.
We're selling himself.
That is like not a slave.
A parent can sell a child to slavery.
Or something. So it's not in the person. You're separating the person. As
good, but it's very interesting the way. Good. It's very interesting the way the Torah says it. The Torah doesn't say that he has to work. He's working to pay off a debt. He's an Eved.
Right.
He is selling himself. Right, but on my side it says Eved. Right, Hebrew says Eved. Okay, it's one of the dangers of you know immediately gravitating to the English. It takes away a lot of the issues. You have to know why when you see bondsmen, you have to wonder what in the world are they doing.
And that there are some mistakes be possible today.
What
could a Jewish person be a bondsman to another Jew today?
Well, if you had Beis Din, sure, why not?
Yeah.
Well, let's see. Kitik now, Rashi in the second column. Okay. Kitik now, Rashi says, Miyad Bet Dalad means Beit Din. You're buying him from where? From the court. Shemachruhu Bignevuto. Ah, now we're starting to get a picture. What happened?
They sold him for his Ganesh.
Ah, so you're talking about a thief. He stole. And as often is with a thief, he has two choices. Well, a thief has one choice, basically. When a person steals, what do they do to him?
They have to pay
restitution.
No. No. One second. There is no such thing in Jewish law as a prison.
What becomes an evidence?
Hold on. There is no such thing in Jewish law as a prison. You should know that. In the whole Masechta of Makos and Sanhedrin, there's no such thing as a prison in Jewish law. Prisons do not exist. Because a man is not an animal, and his man is not is not made to be caged up. Okay. What do you, I mean, let's be honest. All you have to do is look at the American prison system and the penal system today to know that prisons don't work. They work to some degree. They work in the effect that they remove people from society. Okay, but what happens? You let them go, and the exact same thing happens again. I mean, Haraya, you have to, what was it, 2 weeks ago? Some poor kid from Florida. I mean, it was all over the news.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, as a parent, it's the most frightening thing in the world. To have a video that this guy abducted this poor girl. Oh, and they found out afterwards. What do you know? He was a parolee.
Yeah.
What do you know? Lo and behold. Why? Because the prison system does nothing to rehabilitate someone to re-enter them into society. To ask, hey, why in the world, what are you doing in prison? What did you do? Well, I stole. Well, why did you steal? Because I have any money. Well, why did you have any money?
Didn't work.
I didn't have a job, didn't have an education, I had a drug problem, I had a gambling problem, I got involved with gangs. So what do? They take him out of a gang in Los Angeles on the street, and they put him in prison where he's in a gang. And the only way to survive in prison is to be in the gang. Well, that's one of the problems. The prison in and of itself is a problem. You know, it's so interesting that there was a story maybe 3-4 years ago about an American kid who was caught buying drugs in Malaysia. You remember this? So what did they do to him?
Cut off his hand?
No, they cut off his hand.
That's not the one they cut off.
Oh, I thought that was.
They gave him lashes. Corporal punishment. And we were going crazy about corporal punishment and how inhumane it is. It's a terrible thing to give somebody lashes. You know what, though? You know what the rate of drug use is in Malaysia?
Little.
Much lower than it is here. Right? And here, person, drugs, 3 strikes, you're out, and you get thrown into jail. And what do they do in jail?
Not
these drugs. These drugs? So who's right and who's wrong? Who's moral and who's immoral? Prison is... It just doesn't work. It only works because it makes us not have to think about our problems. But it doesn't rehabilitate the problems in society. Says the Torah. Great, then what do you get? Then you're creating this other class of people. This other section of people.
If they're not out, doing it some more. But
eventually they're eventually going to get out. And then the next time, though, the problem is they're not going to do it again. They're going to do something worse. And what we have to do is try to find the root of the problem and resolve that root of the problem. Try, at least, to make some effort. And
what's the
answer? The problem is that's more expensive. I mean, in the long run, in the short term, not in the long run. So what's the answer? The Torah says, let's say you catch a guy who's a thief. Say, I could lock him up in jail, but it's more effective to do the following. Say, okay, pay back. I can't pay back. I'm a thief. I don't have any money.
So you have to
work. You're going to work it off. You're going to know that people make money by earning it. And you're going to be sold to whoever can afford you, and you're going to work it off. It's going to take you 6 years to work off your debt. And I think when you get out after 6 years, maybe you'll think twice about stealing the next time. But not only that, there's something much more than that.
You've learned a profession. You've learned something that will enable you not to have to go back to thievery because you'll be able to earn your own part of stuff.
Correct. Absolutely correct. When you, after 6 years, what did you do for the last 6 years? So you were bought as a slave by some guy. So who usually buys slaves?
A rich person.
Somebody wealthy. Don't think, okay, we're going to talk about what type of work we're going to do, but don't think, you know, plantation owner, low slave, you know, like treat them like dirt. You had a job. You have work. So whatever work he puts you to do, how do you do it? You learn by doing it. That's what you learn. So when they kick you out, so what do? Usually what you'd say is, you know, I need a job.
You've had a 6-year apprenticeship.
There you go.
And you go out to become your own master.
And then when you think about stealing again, maybe you think twice. But no, in America, they don't do that today.
No.
You know, because it's, I don't know why. I mean, I'm not involved in the penal system. Okay. Ubashvi, even the 7th, Ikitiknet Evid Ivri. If you buy, when you buy an Eved Ivri, Sheish Shanim Ya'avod. You must work for 6 years. Uvashvi'is, on the 7th year, Yeitzei Lachafsi Chinam. You go free. Okay? Interesting. What does it sound like?
Shabbat, Shabbat,
Shabbat. Shabbat, Shabbat. Absolutely. Very similar, we're going to see. In Begapo Yavo, Begapo Yetze. If he arrives single,
goes on
he leaves single. In Baal Ishahu, if he's married, Viyatza Isto Imo.
Does that mean she was working too along with
him? Excellent question. Excellent question.
Why would she be there otherwise?
All right. Let's look at Rashi. Viyatza Isto Imo. See again the second column most of the way down, the end of the line. Viyatza Isto Imo. Thank you. Fourth line up. Says Rashi, he asks your question. Who brought her in that she's supposed to go out? Says Rashi. Ela Magid Hakatu, the Torah tells us, Shehakone Eved Ivri, when you buy an Eved Ivri, Chayab Mizonot Ishto Uvana. Yeah, you didn't just buy one guy. Congratulations, you bought a family of 12. You know?
Now, so they're not actually obligated to work for you, but you're obligated to.
No, he has to work for you. He has to work for you. In exchange for working for you, you now are responsible for his entire family.
Right, that's what I'm saying. The rest of the family.
Oh, right. And they don't have to work for you.
Right, but you're obligated not only to feed one person, but all 12.
Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, what will be a big factor? What?
That's such a good deal. She's got to feed the whole family. She's not going to do any work.
As we're going to see, owning slaves is a terrible deal. Mm-hmm. It's a bad deal. It's a hard deal. Okay. And, you know, you think, oh, it's great to own slaves. Not these kinds of slaves. Okay. If the master gives him a wife, v'yaldu lo vanim o vanos, and this wife gives him children. Now, this is talking about if he gives her a non-Jewish wife, a Canaanite woman.
So he entered into this arrangement as a single man, and now the master...
Actually, the Rambam says no. The Rambam says that if the Eved is not married, he cannot take a Canaanite wife. Okay. But if he already is married, then the master can give him another wife.
Oh, another wife.
Ha'isha v'yiladeh ha'kiyeh la'adoneha. The woman and the children belong to the master. V'hu yeche b'gapo. Mean, if he enters with one family... And the guy gives, hey, you want another wife? Here, have another wife. Right, this I don't think we would do today, Mrs. Broberg.
What would be the point?
Interest on your investment.
I guess so. Maybe you'd want the slave.
In other words, you're giving him a wife to procreate with.
Oh, and then you leave.
Now, there definitely was a two-tier level of society back then. There were the Jewish people and the Jewish slaves also, but then there were the Canaanim, the non-Jews, who were treated on a different level. And we're not going to talk about that today, but it's a very interesting topic for discussion. Okay, Pasuk Hey. V'imam or yomar ha'evin. And if the slave would say, Ahavti es adoni. I love my master. Es ishti v'es banai. I love my wife. I love my children. Lo eitzei chafshi. I don't want to go free. Torah says, V'hi gisho adonav el ha'elohim. His master shall bring him to the court. Elohim in this context means court. Lihigisho el hadelet o el hamezuzah. And he shall bring him to the door, or to the mezuzah, the doorpost. V'racha adonav et azno b'marcheya v'avado le'olam. He takes a nail, and he nails him to the doorpost through his ear. You never heard this?
Yeah, I guess I'm sure. I know, I have
few. How many years have you been going through this? You don't have to stay there. You can leave afterwards. You can pull it out. But
I tell you, I don't know. I guess I must have been sniffing during the Shabbat. Yeah, the
Avadol Le'olam. And he's a slave forever. Before you get to, is that true? What is that for?
I was going to ask if that's to show others what happened to him because he was a slave.
What is the purpose of the nail?
You're not supposed to be a slave to anybody who's a witness.
Oh, very good. We'll talk about that. What is the purpose of the nail? What is the purpose of the ear? Why is ear?
The ear is where they heard
the one who heard
that. Oh, everybody's going to Rashi. So let's look at the Rashi. Very good. And then we'll get to some other stuff. I'm going to skip to the good Rashi. Not the bad one. Not that there are bad ones, but there's a lot to choose. Yeah.
I don't know.
It's on page 418. It's like 10 lines down. In this middle of the line, Amar Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. It's pretty hard to find.
Yeah, I got it.
Amar Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, about 10 lines down in the Rashi, in the first column on page 418. Rashi in the first column on 418. I don't know why Art School for some reason felt the need to print Rashi in the smallest possible print.
And it's in the middle of the sentence.
I don't see it.
It's about here, 418. It's about here, Mrs. Unger. Here, Amar, I think. Amar of Yochanan and Zakkai, around there.
Yeah.
Yeah, magnifying glasses. It's not a bad idea. Amar of Yochanan and Zakkai. Yochanan and Zakkai said, Ozen zot, this ear, Sheshama al Har Sinai lo tignov. This ear that heard on Har Sinai, don't steal. V'halach beganav, and he went and stole, tiratsa, slam it, pierce it. Why the ear?
Is that what he heard?
There's only one problem with Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai.
Much later.
What? There's a problem with Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai's explanation. A very fundamental problem.
It's not being punished because of stealing.
Why? Why do you say that?
I mean, the reason they're doing that is not because he stole, not because he wants to leave.
No. Not because he wants to leave.
Because he doesn't want to.
Because he doesn't want to leave.
Right.
So Rabbi Zakkai, hey, don't. It's not about the stealing. Why are you telling me it's about the stealing? This is after the stealing is already over. So why in the world are you telling me now that this ear piercing is because of the stealing? Now, he knew this question. It's a good question. Mm-hmm. Everybody understand the question?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? You understand the question?
No.
No. It's good. Thank you for telling me. Well, you can't be embarrassed. You've got to tell me. I'll try to explain it again. When is the ear piercing take place?
After he's been a servant.
He's really supposed to go free at the end of 6 years.
But he doesn't want to go, so this is...
But he doesn't want to go, so this is his way of indenturing him. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai came along in the Rashi and said, the reason why is because the ear, is because this is the ear that heard don't steal, so therefore I'm piercing your ear because you didn't listen. So our question is...
Why at the end?
There you go. Got it. Good. Right.
I mean, it didn't happen at the beginning.
Right. If the whole purpose was the piercing was because of the stealing,
should have done it at the beginning.
Very good. So he doesn't answer that. We'll give you an answer in a second. Rashi continues. V'im mocher atzmo, and if he had sold himself, ozen sheshama al Har Sinai, the ear that heard on Har Sinai, ki li b'nei Yisrael avadim, the Jewish people are my slaves, the halach the kana adon atzmo, he went and bought for himself a master. Ki ratza. Right? He should have his ear pierced. So that makes sense. Right? The second one we understand.
Yes.
The first one we have to find out and understand more. So I saw a pirush in the Kli Yakar. Kli Yakar was written by Rabbeinu Shlomo Afayin ben Aaron. Well, that helps.
No.
I don't know who that is either. Okay. Well, we know his name. And he says the following. It's a long essay. He says one possible explanation is the following. When a person, he steals, he has to be punished. So what is the punishment of a person who steals normally? He has to pay it back. That's the punishment. You steal, you have to pay back. What if you can't pay back? Good. Then you become a slave, and that's your punishment. But if this person says a Kli Yakar, if 6 years down the road he comes along and says, I want to stay, I like my wife, I like my children,
like,
so what did he tell you?
This
is great! What a deal! That's not a punishment. So then the Torah comes along and says, well, obviously you didn't get the whole not stealing thing in the first place.
I'll show you what happens
to somebody who steals. So you have to understand this is a punishment. That there's something less in you. That you aren't listening properly. That you weren't listening properly. Actually, the second understanding works also for the first one, too. You're now signing up for basically for life indenturehood. You're signing up for until the next Yovel, which could be another
50
years. It could be another 43 years, probably. You're signing up for basically the rest of your life. When a person becomes an eved, a slave, so he's subservient to somebody else. His time is not his own. His responsibilities are not your own. There's a certain luxury in being a slave. Who spoke about this? I think Rabbi Alon spoke about it. Anybody hear Rabbi Alon in the Hebrew? Mm-hmm. Slavery has a certain sense of luxury to it. What does that mean? No worries.
Responsibility.
It's interesting. He explained that the Jewish people, when they come to ask for food, they remember, he says, Zacharnu es shir habasar asher yashavnu alav b'mitzrayim. We used to sell them these pots of meat in Egypt. Now, who thinks that the Jews got, you know, like they're sitting on corned beef every day that they got to eat in the desert? So Rav Alon said, I wondered. He said, well, the difference is, what they were saying is, in Egypt, we didn't have any responsibilities. We didn't have any problems. You know, I would say prisons are the same way, right? What is the obligation of a prisoner in prison? Get up. Right, they're in prison. Go play ball. Go do work on the side of the road. My food comes here. Yeah. You know, and it's so interesting. When a person is sent to prison now, all of a sudden they start demanding their rights.
And they make less place to get paid for.
Well, they get paid not a lot. They don't get paid very much.
But all of a sudden they have health care.
They want their health care, and they're suing for the food isn't enough, and this is enough. And that's the law of the land. And they have the right to make those demands.
A lot of them don't even want to leave prison.
It's so interesting. Anybody ever see, there's a very famous movie called The Shawshank Redemption. Very powerful movie. Very powerful movie. And there's this scene about a man who had been he was the librarian, as they called him, and he had been in for like 50 years, his whole life. And it was time for him to get out. He committed murder when he was 20, and they're going to kick him out at the age of 75. And the movie shows how sadly, very, very, very sadly, it becomes like a grocery bagger. He can't, what's he supposed to do? And ultimately, he commits suicide because he can't stand his own life outside of the prison. That was the only thing he knew.
When he went in, there were, of course, buggies. He comes out, there are cars. He can't conceive.
Right, it was a lot. It was too much for him. So slavery, in a sense, there's a certain sense of comfort in it. There's a certain sense of, you know, I'm being taken care of. Okay, I got to work. Oh, it'll work! But I don't have to worry, I don't have to pay bills, I don't have problems, if I get sick, he's got to take care of me. That's a nice thing in a way. You have a sense of assuredness. I think that...
It's their mentality, too.
I don't think it's their mentality. I think that it's a mentality that anyone can get, that anyone can become accustomed to. Mm-hmm. That anyone can sort of you know, appreciate and kind of enjoy. You know, like, you talk about the Iraqis. You know, how could it be that, you know, it's hard to know here what the Iraqis are thinking, but how could you be an Iraqi and be pro-Saddam? So, you know, so they tell you how. They say, well he, of course he oppressed and tortured us, but, you know, he took care of us also. It was an inherent deal. You know, he was the ruler and dictator, and it was his job to make sure that we had what we needed. If that's all you know, that's all you know, and you're happy with it. Okay. So that's also what it means to be a slave. That's not what a Torah Jew is all about. The job of a Torah Jew is not to be a servant to somebody else and have somebody else take care of you, but to place your trust in God. Right? You have to try. You have to make an effort. You have to work. You have responsibilities. You have to call out to God. Not that somebody else is going to provide, that somebody's going to put food on your plate, you know, at a certain, you know, certain period of time every day. But, you know, you got to go out there and you got to hustle and you got to have faith. Because without it, it's very easy not to have faith. It's very, very easy not to have faith. Because who needs faith when you have the government providing for you?
You transfer your faith from Hashem to the faith of your taskmaster.
Right. Right. You know.
And we're selling a key.
It's interesting. They say that Marx said that religion was the opiate of the masses, right? And he wanted the government to supplant the need for religion. And that's exactly what he did. The government will provide everything that you need. So if the government provides everything that you need, then who needs God? That's not a Torah way of life, right? It's you and the Kodesh Baruch Hu, you and God. Okay, I want to go back to the beginning, and we'll do it a little bit more in depth. Says the Ramban, I should have photocopied this stuff for you, but of course, it's been a little bit busy this week, I apologize. The Ramban says, let me see if I can find it. Ramban asked the following question. Why is it that the Torah begins with Eved Ivri? I mean, if you're going to start with laws, start with stealing, start with cheating on the taxes, but you know, you're going to start with slavery? Why would you start with slavery? Says the Ramban. Hitchil ha-bishpat ha-rishon be-eved Ivri. The Torah began its first statement, the first bishpat, the first law with Eved Ivri. Why? Because, mipnei she-yesh b'shiluach ha-eved b'shana ha-shvi'it, l'shecher l'yishiyat Mitzrayim. Because in the sending out of the slave on the seventh year, that's Zecher Yishiyat Mitzrayim, Hanizkar B'dibur HaRishon. That makes you remember Egypt. Why? You are the master, and you have, hey, I've got this deal. So we're already used to things. We're already accustomed to doing things. Right? I'm happy. I like my slave. I don't want to send him away. The Torah says, no. You have to send the slave away. Why? Because it says, V'zacharta ki ever ha'isha be'erich Mitzrayim. You too were a slave in Egypt. Vayiftecha Hashem Elokecha. And God redeemed you. Al kein anochi mitzavcha hadavar hazeh hayom. That's why I command you this today.
Makes sense.
It makes a lot of sense. It's a very powerful message. You know, sometimes it's nice being a master. Nice having somebody do things for you and dominating of somebody else. Says God, yeah, it was so nice. How did you feel in Egypt? And now you have to do the same thing that God did. When I look at this, at laws of Eved Ivri, the Torah talks about the Eved. But what about the master? What are the laws of being a master? I'm going to talk about that in a few minutes. But I think if the Eved, if the slave corresponds to the Jewish people in Egypt, then the master corresponds to
Pharaoh.
God.
Okay.
Right. That's true. You know, it's very interesting. I sometimes think that parenting, that God created the world, that we should be parents for one reason. God wants us to be parents in order to understand Him better. I think I've spoken about this before. There are some times, you know, where you have a baby, Kanainahara, and she isn't feeling well, and she has a messy diaper. We've all been there. Right? And so when you see a child, and the child is uncomfortable, and the child's not feeling well, you have a messy diaper, and you're cleaning the diaper, so you're angry at the child? A little baby, you know? So what do? No, you're soft, and you're gentle, and you're loving, and you're caring, and you clean up your child. Because they don't know better. So why would it be that a Kadosh Baruch Hu would create a world where I have a child who soils herself, and I have to clean her up? You know why? So I often think that that's an allegory for us to understand God. How many times have the Jewish people soiled themselves?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, worse.
Yeah.
And we're not babies. And then we look to God and we say, God, clean up our mess. So says God, just like you clean your child with love and you forgive and you clean her up and you send her on her way, so I do the same thing.
We hope.
I hope. We hope. I think that parenting is very much a lesson in understanding, in trying to emulate God. You know, your child makes a mistake, your child disobeys you, usually, right? You say to your child, go to sleep at 10 o'clock, right? Your teenage son. You tell him, I want you in bed by 10 o'clock. 10:45 rolls around, and he's still playing video games. So you say to him, I thought I said I wanted you in bed by 10 o'clock. Yeah. Sorry. So now do you like bear a grudge and, you know, are angry at your child? Maybe a little bit. But the next day, you know, you're already forgiving the kid for doing, you know, and does the same thing again, you forgive him again. Why? Because that's a lesson in emulating God. So the same thing is true, just as it applies to parenting, and I think about a lot of different things in parenting. And, you know, and giving sustenance and the worry and the care and the love. All those things are a powerful allegory for understanding God, I think. The same thing is true as being a master, owning a slave. If the Jewish people, if the slave relates to the Jewish people, the master is like God, is like the person trying to understand God. So now you'll know, you want to understand what God is, what it's like? Okay, go ahead and take a responsibility for a person with a family. We'll see how long you'll live. See how easy that is. And then maybe you'll have a smidgen of understanding of what I got to go through every day. Well, we'll talk about the master. So therefore he says, what's that? What? What does God have to go through every day? What God has to go through every day. Yeah, not, thank God for me, it's okay. Yeah, right. I don't have any slaves either. I have children, but not slaves. What? We're slaves to our children, which is interesting. Very interesting. We're not, but we are. And we're going to see, actually, that the master was a slave to his slave. Using, I'm a slave owner. We'll see in a second. Okay. He says, there are a number of sevens also in this idea of slavery. Not only is there a seven in the first 7 years, but then what's the next seven?
Seven times.
Seven sevens in the Yovel. There's a 50, correct. Therefore, he says, HaMitzvah HaZod Ru'uya LaHakdim Ota Hi Nichberet Ma'od. This mitzvah, it's a mitzvah of Eved Ivri. It's a commandment to have an Eved Ivri. That's the first one. Because that's the first one, it's the greatest way of relating to God, of understanding God, of coming close, of understanding Shabbos, understanding how God redeemed us, and understanding how we therefore have to emulate God and redeem other people as well. That's a hard thing. You know, you see slavery as like, you know, downtrodden and taking advantage of people. It's entirely the opposite. It is absolutely the opposite. And people don't really understand that. Okay. What about the responsibilities of a master? So in order to know the responsibilities of a master, go to Parshat Re'eh, page 1016. The last word on the page, on page 1016. Last word on the page. All the way till everybody gets it. This is Penfield's line. This is Penfield's line. Okay. You got it?
1016.
Yeah, key. Ki imacher lecha achicha ha'ivri o ha'ivriya. Who is God talking to now? If your brother, a Hebrew man or a Hebrew woman, will be sold to you. So who's God talking to this time? You last, in Shmos, we were talking about the slave. Now let's talk about the master. Va'avadcha sheishanim. And he works for you. He's your slave for 6 years. Uvashana hashvi'is. In the seventh year, tishalchenu chafshi me'imach. You have to send him out free. Meaning not only is it a mitzvah on the slave only 6 years, it's a mitzvah for the master also. V'chis tishalchenu chafshi me'imach. Listen to what the Torah says. And when you send him away, lo tishalchenu reikam. Don't set him out empty-handed. What happened when he was empty-handed?
He had a soul
in order to. You already know his history. You know what started him down this path. You have no right to send him out into the world with nothing. What's he going to do? Even if he has a trade. He has no way. You're going to set him up to do that again? That's a terrible thing. Lo tishalchenu reikam. Rather, ha'anek ta'anik lo mitzoncha u'migiyan garnacha u'miyikvecha. Adorn him generously from your flocks, from your threshing floor, from your wine cellar. Asher beirachecha Hashem Elokecha titen lo. God gave you?
Give him.
You give him. It's a very interesting lesson. Yeah, Trudy.
I was just reading English a little further. I think it says, and according to his needs. So if he was wealthy once, you have to give him something that he's used to. You have to give him more than someone who was poor. Because they were only used to it.
Well, why would he steal the food?
Well, you don't have to make him rich, though.
No, it doesn't say that.
Right.
According to his need.
According to his need, right. I would say, I would argue the other way. I would say maybe what it really means is, what's he going to do with himself? You have to get him started. You know, and if he wants to you have to give him enough to get himself off the ground. Let's get there. But it's such an interesting lesson. Such an interesting lesson. That here you are, you're a slave owner. Yeah, but understand, the reason that you're a slave owner is because you do well. But you don't do well because of you. You do well because of a kind of struggle, because of God. So you want to learn what it means to be God, you're going to give to somebody else. You have that obligation.
Share what Hashem gave you.
Correct.
But why would a slave want to leave if he's going to get... why would he want to stay if he's going to get...
He's got everything.
You tell me, why would a slave want to stay?
I don't know why.
You don't know people that are afraid of the outside, that are afraid of the world? They have
everything.
We all know people that are enslaved to a certain way of life. I'm not going to talk about, I'm not slavery per se anymore, but I have a job. I hate my job. So quit. Get a different job.
I don't know anything else. I don't know
what else. So what do you say?
I don't know what else.
I'm not going to get another job. What, you're talented? You're a smart person? You're a go-getter? Get another job? No, I'm happy where I am. Why? People are petrified of the unknown. I understand it. I really do. People are afraid of the unknown. We're afraid to put ourselves under the heavens and say, God, I need your help. I understand that. Out in the open. Oh, you think that people don't learn in Kola for years and years and years because they're afraid? No, it isn't any different. My dear, I don't think it's that different. Might be. How could you, I think that it's a wonderful thing for the, I would say probably maybe 20% of the people that are really, stark learners, as we say. What about the other 80%? So they're peer pressured in. They're peer pressured into the system because they're told that if they don't go into the system, then they're no good. Or they won't get a good shidduch. And once they're in the system, they have a child and another child. Now somebody says, okay, how am I going
to
make a living?
Hard to get out.
How do you get out? Hard to get out. Why? What am I going to do with myself? How am I going to survive? How am I going to make a living? I don't have any training. So what do they do?
They stay.
I'm telling you, absolutely true.
You know a lot of people that...
What?
No,
you're supposed to stay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then if you're already 25, how am I going to learn a trade?
25, you're young.
I know.
35, you maybe have to start thinking about it. 35. I'm not exaggerating. I think I'm exaggerating. Usually when they hit around 30, then they start thinking. Usually when they hit around 30. But around 30, most people have around 4 children. And, you're married. If you're 30 and you got married, you're 22, you're married 8 years. 4 kids. 5 kids. Am I exaggerating? You tell me, am I exaggerating?
No. Just right.
So now you tell me, why wouldn't you leave?
How are you doing from there?
So the mitzvah is, for the master to say, you know what?
It's time to go.
Because while this might be good for me, it's not really good for you.
Like the in-laws.
Well, like the in-laws. I'm not talking about after a weekend.
The
Torah says you must say it. Yeah. And not only when you say it, make sure, give him what he needs to get started to go.
It's hard for the master to let him go.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
The doings that he has to do.
When you become accustomed to somebody, when you become somebody, somebody who knows the work. So let's say you're here in the office. So Rebecca De Lizerta is in the office. She knows, there's so many just little details that go on about the announcements and who do you call and what's going on. It takes a long time to learn how to do that. And to learn how to do it well.
Mm-hmm. And then you do it well, and then time to go.
All of a sudden, to lose somebody like that, if you've ever had somebody work for you like that, oh, it's terrible. Because you could get somebody who's very capable, but then you have to train them, and that's what it is, and this is how we do it. Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to be a master. Very hard.
You said you have human relationships with this person.
Mm-hmm.
Confidant, he knows
exactly. Test buff.
Yeah.
It's half
but if you have your choice, a master or a slave,
it's half to be a master and self.
I don't think. Well, I don't think so.
No.
I don't know what I would choose, but I think a lot of people would choose to be the slave.
To be the master.
You think so? How many people think that they would choose to be the master? How many would choose to be a slave? Well, nobody would choose to be a slave.
But a slave was not always a stone or sometimes they're so poor they could.
Oh, you sell yourself into slavery. Right. Those are the two ways. Either Beit Din sold you or you sold yourself. Mm-hmm. You have to remember you were a slave in Egypt. And this is the Ramban quoted. That's why I commend you this thing today. Tezayin, verse 16. If he says to you, Lo etei ne'imach, I don't want to leave you. I'm in verse 16 on page 1018. Ki ahidcha, I love you. Ve'esbeitecha, in your home. Ki tov lo imach. It's good for him. V'lakachta et hamartzeya. You must take the all. Anybody know what an all AWL is?
Responsibility.
What's an AWL?
It's like what you make a punch in
a piece of paper. A puncher. Okay. Bam! You do it. And then you get an eved forever. And you would do the same thing for your master. Listen to what the Torah says. Lo yikseh ve'einecha v'shalechecha otel chavshi mi'imach. It should not be difficult for you in your eyes when you send him away. Ki mishneh shachar shachir avadcha sheish shanim. For twice the wage of a hired hand, 6 years he has served you. Ubeirachecha Hashem elokecha asher kol b'chol asher ta'aseh. And Hashem your God will bless you in all that you do. In essence, what's the Torah trying to tell you? I want you to be a master. I'm going to bless you if you become a master. Because you know why? When you read all the halachas about being a master, nobody wants it.
You're right.
I would never do it. Let me just share with you very briefly some of the halachas of being a master, of being a slave owner. This is from the Rambam. So he says, first of all, he says, one second. Let me see if I can get it here. Kol Eved Ivri, every Eved Ivri, the master has to pay for the sustenance, the mizonos, of the woman that he's married to, and his children. Okay, one second. He's also chai the mizonos banav mosav. He also has to sustain the daughters, sons, and daughters. Okay, one second. Even though the master must pay for the sustenance of the children, ein lo b'maaseh yideihem klum. They don't have to do anything. He doesn't have any possession of the children. Rather, who gets the money from the children and the wife working? The slave. So now I pay my slave, I feed them, I clothe him, and his wife and his children. His wife goes out and has a job at some computer firm, and lo and behold, he's making money. That's very nice. He makes the money, and I still have to pay for his room and board. Who wants that?
It's not
better
to be a slave.
Yeah. Okay. One second. I just want to see what kind of... I want to get to the part where it gets about work. No, I would say, if his wife can work in computers, he should be learning. Take it easy, Miriam. Yeah, okay. hold on one second. Kol Eved Ivri, every Eved Ivri, Asur La'avod Lo Biparach. You're not allowed to give him bitter hard work. Biparach. What does that mean? That's Ze Avodah She'ein Lo Kitzva, Ba'avodah She'ein Lo Tzarich La. You can't give him arbitrary work that you don't need, and work that has no end.
End.
Keep going until I come back. You can't. You have to say, I want you to, you know, you've given him that. You have to give him that. Finish the job. Okay? Kol Eved Ivri. Asur li Yisrael shekaneu lehabido bedvarim bozim shehem yuchredim la'asot ha'avadim. You're not allowed to treat him like a slave. You can't make him do degrading work that you would think would go to slaves. Like to make him take stuff to the bathroom, he has to empty out the chamber pots, or put on your shoes. Shenemar lo ta'avod bo ob avodat aved. He's not your slave. He sounds like a slave, but he's not your slave. Ella, rather, eino nohig bo ella kesachir. He's like a worker for you. So now, you have all the obligations of a slave owner, and none of the benefits. Yeah.
But is
there were slaves. Yes, there were.
Well, you didn't need them to do that.
Well, you're taking on this responsibility.
That's right. You're obligated to, but it's not because.
So I'm asking you. And there's also more. There's more halachas. Like, for example, one second. Chayav adam asfotam machal u'mishke b'ksut u'mador. You have to give him food and drink and clothing and lodgings. And shelo tehe ata ochel pat naki v'hu ochel pat kebar. He has to eat what you eat. So you don't eat the good stuff and give him the dreck. If you're having Jerusalem pizza, you get Jerusalem pizza for him, and it's all 12 children too, right?
In other words, you're really getting a master, not a slave,
well,
because you're...
What?
Brother.
I don't think so. I think the Torah says, look at the end of what we said, what we learned in the end. It says... God will bless you in all you do when you send away your slave. But I think that's an honorable thing to own a slave. Because in essence, what do you do when you're buying this guy out of poverty or you're buying this guy out of you know, when he stole something? You're giving a person a chance at life. Yeah, you're a mentor. Yeah, absolutely. So you ask, why does the Torah begin with slavery? Because it only sounds like slavery. What it really is it's really the highest form of kindness. We're giving another person a chance at life. Most people would say, you know what, God, I don't want that responsibility. You know what God says? You think I do? But he doesn't say it anyway.
Yeah, okay.